Everyone, we will now bring the Monday, January 14th, 2008 meeting of the City Council to order and let the record show that all council members are present. For a moment of silence tonight, the day after our last meeting, we lost a real champion of Morro Bay, Ed Biagini. So I would ask in the moment of silence tonight that we direct our thoughts and prayers towards him. Thank you. With us tonight to lead the pledge. You know, one of the reasons I like having young people say the pledge is you make us say it slow and really listen to the words. Thank you. Okay, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? We know you're part of the Estero Bay Youth Coalition, and you were the ones that suggested no smoking on the beaches. So just tell us what you like in school.
Well, at the Estero Bay Youth Coalition, we talked about no smoking on the beaches and parks, and they said to get a piece of paper, and we went around the school asking people to write something that they don't like about smoking, about people smoking on Morro Bay's beaches and beaches and parks. So we got a lot of people to sign that.
And you brought it to City Hall, and it happened. What do you like in school?
What they said that when they did the beach cleanup or the park cleanup, they found a lot of cigarette butts.
So the next thing you're asking about is parks, right?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll talk about that. Thank you very much for coming tonight. Okay, because it is the first meeting of the year and it's been a while since our last meeting, we have a lot of announcements and presentations, so bear with us a little bit here. Next up is our shop local representative. Is Jason Cordero here? There he is. Oh, I didn't see you. We're behind somebody. And Jason's from the Gold Tree Jewelry Store. And Jason, tell us about the Gold Tree.
Well, my name is Jason Cordero, if people don't know me. I just purchased the Gold Tree Jewelers with my wife, Pearl Cordero. And we know that Gold Tree Jewelers has a long reputation in this community for over 30 years, and we want to maintain that. We want to maintain the honesty, the sincerity, and everything behind Gold Tree. And we know that it's hard to nowadays when you have big box stores and everybody's offering cheaper items. It's really important to shop locally because we support our community as well. So I practice what I preach. Everything I bought for Christmas was here in Morro Bay. So, and the most used things that we actually use still is the things that I purchase here. So, you know, I do think it's important to continue to support us so we can support you and with, you know, being able to donate to, you know, fundraisers and things like that. So any questions?
And in addition to jewelry, do watch repair and jewelry repair?
We do watch repair. We do custom pieces.
Jewelry cleaning.
In fact, we're trying to do new, invent new ways to help the community, such as everybody has old pieces of jewelry, so we're trying to think of a creative way to do a consignment on a mass scale, such as using eBay and our reputation as a store. So that's, you know, we're working on that. And we're also working on new exciting things to bring us on the map, such as trying to do showpieces.
To Rick Elgert. So if you two would like to meet at the podium there.
Hi, Ms. Mayor, Honorable Council. I'm here to present Morro Bay a check for $2,700 for Morro Bay Beautiful for the purchase of 5 trash cans. I thank Rick through his cooperation fronted for the cost of these. They're already here in operation, and we made an agreement we would buy five, and here is the price of $2,700 for those five, and thank you very much. I'll just, and if I may, I would like to say just a quick brief message on what Morro Bay Beautiful is all about. Our grand poobah, Ann Reisner, isn't here tonight, but we do the art cans, as many of you know, and we are in the cigarette business as well. We have these new butt-ins. You may see them through the city that we're putting in with the blessing of the city, and that's where you put your butts in this little cigarette container there in front of the post office as well as around town. So we're doing that as well. And planter boxes, secondhand rows, yard sale, which is going to be in April, Little Brigade, and the spit cleanup. Our new goals will be working with the city in some manner for tree planting. That's our goal for 2008. And I just wanted to tell you, we have a general meeting that's going to be January 28th at 9 a.m. at Dorn's. All the public is invited. Bring your questions. We will have our balance sheet. We will have our goals. We will have our treasurer's reports and a slate of new officers. So everyone is invited, whether you're members or not. Come see what it's all about and eat some free food at Dorn's, 9 o'clock, January 28th. Thank you.
Thank you. The next thing I have the pleasure of doing is honoring some of our employees for long-term employment. And we have three employees who have reached the 10-year mark. Jim Kroll in the Harbor Department. He's a reserve harbor officer. He's actually been a 25-year employee. In the fire department, Jeff Simpson, fire engineer paramedic, 10 years. And in the finance department, Steve Dewar. He's our information systems technician, and he's been with us 10 years. Unfortunately, none of them could be here to get their pins. The one who has been here and for 15 years and is here to get his pin is Hank Roth. So if you would meet me, Hank, up at the podium.
Oh, wait till I give you the whole spiel. Sit down, wait. I have things to say. We're going to embarrass them good. Okay. Hank Roth, Crime Prevention Coordinator with the Police Department. Hank is probably one of our most traveled employees. He's worked for Public Works, Recreation and Parks, and the Police Department, and he's also served on and is serving on the Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors. Hank was initially hired in 1992, part-time at the Recreation and Parks Department, and Volunteer of the Year by the Chamber of Commerce in 2007. I just want to say, and people have also said that he is a team player, he's very loyal. Much to his frustration sometimes, I think, he's the one that all of us know to call when we need anything within the city. Because if he doesn't know how to get it, he's got the key to find where to get it. And he certainly saved me several times, and I think a lot of us. He is absolutely a wonderful ambassador for Morro Bay. And I'm going to tell one story about the Bird Festival. We had a very particular leader of one of our events, and I had Hank come over to set up this room for her, and she was very fussy. And I got a call from her after he had set up the room, and she said, "That young man was so nice." I've never had a word of praise from her before. This was really something, and that's Hank. And he does that all the time. He's a wonderful ambassador. He's a wonderful face of Morro Bay. I also consider him a very good personal friend. Congratulations. Here's your pin.
Thank you. Well, since I get a chance to say something, you're all in trouble now. It hasn't always been easy, but it's always been enjoyable. I think what really makes this enjoyable, working for the city, is that I'm working for my and serving my friends and my neighbors and my community. And I really appreciate this. And this is for all of you. Thank you.
Oh, Okay, now we get down to all the business stuff. Couple of announcements. Park closures. I know that we've all read in the paper about, oh my gosh, all the state parks are closing around here. They're not all closing. Nothing's happening yet. It's a sort of a beginning salvo from the governor. And I wanted to just take a couple of quotes from a message from Nick Franco, who's our district park superintendent. He says, let me be very clear that this is all the beginning of the budget process. The governor proposes a budget, and over the next many months, discussion happens until the legislator approves a budget. Until it's approved, we don't really know what will happen. You'll see a list of proposed park closures that includes all the parks in this district except Hearst Castle and Morro Bay State Park. The reality is that implementing a park closure that significant with reservations already made will take a significant amount of time. Until we know the actual decisions, there's no reason to change the way we are currently delivering services to the public. There, even if the parks close, they're not going to put a gate across the entrance. It's not that kind of closure. What will happen is that there won't be restrooms open, perhaps. There won't be docents. There won't be trail leading things, although some of the docents, because they're volunteers, that may still go on. But it's personnel more than the park accessibility that will be affected. So don't panic. It's the beginning thing. I know a lot of people are writing about, you know, protesting this idea, and certainly we'll look into that too. But anyway, I wanted to have that explanation out there for all of you. Also, just want to let you know that we are pursuing our city manager search. We've been running ads and put internet job postings on. We've already received some resumes, and we'll be looking at some of those and ultimately setting
a handsome thing. And then they have a paragraph at the bottom about the involvement that they've had here. So I just wanted people to know that Morro Bay is another way of advertising through this calendar. Second, I want to mention that the state water reduction, we spoke about this at the Water Resources Advisory Committee this last Wednesday, and I put in a formal protest that the county accepted all of our allotment and then changed their mind and reduced it to taking all of what they want, which means we have to now start buying water from the county in addition to what we already pay the state. And I know staff's in negotiations with that, but I just wanted you to know that I leveled that protest there. And then the last thing, I attended the County Planning Commission meeting last Thursday, which was hearing their initial ordinance on the mobile home conversion that they're writing. And rather than pass it, they decided to go through it and see what parts they want to change. They, at this point, are not doing a zoning change, so that will be coming within the next year. And so I know that Mr. Grantham and I are on the ad hoc committee for that, and we haven't met like we would have, but we were waiting for this county meeting. And now that we have their ordinance, I think that we can move forward a little bit further. Plus, there's been some legislation at the state level passed this past few months. So hopefully we'll bring that forward to you.
Okay. Bill?
No.
Rick? Melody?
Yeah, the overhead shows a fundraiser that is going on for Ruth Angus, who has lived in Morro Bay for years and has done docent work through the NEP and has been fighting a medical battle lately. The fundraiser is actually going to be pretty fun with this guy Dave Stamey playing some country music, and they're going to have a country Santa Maria-style barbecue there. That's January 26th at the Odd Fellows Hall in San Luis Obispo. It'll be from 4 to 9 p.m., $20 to get in, and all of the proceeds will go to benefit Ruth Angus to help her with her medical expenses at this time. I plan to be there, so I hope other people will be there on January 26th. The second thing, I met with the IWMA, which is the Integrated Waste Management, or the recycling bunch of people in the county, and we are working on a battery take-back ordinance here locally, and the problem isn't so much with consumers. We all know that it's illegal now to put any kind of a battery in the trash. The problem is that the people who are supposed to take back the batteries, not all of them are cooperative. Everybody who's a small guy, a little guy, a local guy, has all got their battery take-back cartons in their stores. The people who are resisting is the Target Corporation and Home Depot. They will not allow the IWMA to put these battery recycling containers by their stores and go and pick them up. No cost, no expense, no muss. So we're enacting an ordinance. It should be enacted before the end of April. And if they don't obey this ordinance to help us recycle batteries, we'll fine them $1,000 a day.
Can I interrupt for a second? Is that a county ordinance? Or
that's just in this county, this jurisdiction, this IWMA. Although I think it's going to go statewide in a hurry. Boat haul out does not interrupt the harbor walk at any point. It's down by what's called the intake structure for the power plant. So we should just wait. I think I heard from Andrea very specifically that this will come back before council for a public meeting within 3 or 4 months. And so we'll all have an opportunity to talk about it. And then finally, I might ask Mr. Schultz to talk about an election workshop that you're planning for us, and also say that if you're thinking about running for one of these jobs up here, the filing period happens very early this year. It starts February 11th and goes until March 7th. Reason for that is we're going to have our first ever primary in Morro Bay. Because it's a new primary, a new system, Rob decided we should have a workshop about it. And Rob?
Yes, on January 23rd, I'll have a workshop here at the Vets Hall at 6 p.m. And I thought it'd be better to do in a workshop format where it'll be informal, questions will be asked, I'll have a PowerPoint presentation, and take you through the issue of a primary and how that works with getting 50% of the votes cast and moving on to the main election in November. We will have an earlier period with going with the primary in June. We will have the period for nominations and to apply is from February 7th to March 11th, I believe, is the time.
February 11th to March 7th.
Okay. Yeah. So February 11th to March 7th will be the time. But at the election workshop, I'll go through all of those dates and also through all of the different requirements and how this election will differ from any other ones we've had in Morro Bay.
Okay. Thank you. And that's it.
And that workshop will be broadcast again on AGP. So if you can't make the workshop and you are interested in running, you can catch it again on TV. Yes, because that ends when tomorrow is the last day for Friday is the last day for applications. We have openings on several of our advisory boards and commissions. So please, if you are interested in any of those positions, get an application from Bridget and get it in by Friday. And we will be having interviews for those. We'll set the date for that later this evening. Okay. Thank you. Rather than just have police and or fire make a report tonight, because of the storm and a lot of the things that went on both before and after, I've asked each of our departments to give us a short report of what they did to prepare for and to take care of things during and after the storm, just so that all of you are aware that we're not asleep at the switch. Everybody's really working hard both before and after an event like that, and just a little bit of what went on. So want to start with Mike?
Thank you, Madam Mayor, City Council. Well, we all get a heads up when these big storms head our way. The County OES, the Office of Emergency Services, keeps us well informed. With the email reports from the National Weather Service on this one, we felt it necessary to coordinate with the other department heads and the city manager, and also spoke with the mayor regarding the storm that was coming in. We looked at our resources. We had sand piled out in front of the Public Works yard for those that needed sandbagging. We put out a message with AGP on Channel 20 just so residents would be aware that we could have strong winds and a significant amount of rain as well. You got to excuse me. I'm fighting a pretty related calls. Nothing too significant, though. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And, Rob, you're going to give our public services report.
Yes, public services prepared by, as we do before every winter season, confirming our storm drains are clear, checking our problem areas, taking a look at our problem trees to make sure that haven't noticed any of them failing, any more health. On the Friday, January 4th, we had five public services field personnel on staff. We called back six off-duty personnel that evening to help with the events. We incurred about 31 hours of overtime for that event. Damage from the storm included loss of five city street trees and one major limb. All the trees were removed from the street Friday night, with the exception of one at Chest and Cerrito. And we had to wait until PG&E could de-energize that power line for that removal. The city crews cleared 21 storm drains Friday night and hauled nine truckloads of debris to the yard on Saturday, with follow-up of 12 loads on Monday. Our street sweeper, who normally dumps about three loads of sediment per sweeping, the day after the storm dumped six loads of sediment at our yard to take to the landfill. And crews are still picking up some smaller branches that are around town that are good citizens that pulled off the roadway, and we're still running around collecting those. Thank you.
Thank you. And Rick, Harbor was busy.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and Council. We do, as any storm, we do a lot of preparation with vessels and vessel owners, and trying to get them to double-check their lines, come down and check their vessels. And then we go through also and work all the lines and make sure fenders are out. But in that storm, there was sustained 40-knot winds, and we clocked a number of gusts in excess of 60 knots. And this, in these conditions, when they come straight out of the south, you've got the whole fetch of the bay. So we had waves, and a foot and a half, 2 foot waves in the bay. Where the most damage was toward the north end, where the waves were the biggest, and especially in the slips, where the boats were tending to pull away from, either pushed into or pull away from the slips or the facilities of South and North T-Pier. So I wrote down some of what Eric gave me from that day. Numerous vessels parted tie-up lines at both piers and in slips. No major damage done, except three or four boats of the South T-Pier did sustain moderate damage when four to six-foot chop focused on the area. One boat was moved out by HP, but little else could be done for the others except double up on tie-up lines and fenders where possible. Several vessels dragged anchor in the anchorage and needed emergency towing response. All were towed out by Harbor Patrol before any damage was done. There was one especially large boat that towed out that drug anchor about 6 o'clock and got picked up right away, which was very good because it was bearing down on our slips. Several moored vessels had swamp skiffs that we dealt with, as well as some sails came unfurled more on moored vessels that were resecured. We also had they're temporarily secured right now, so we're able to use all the slips. And you can see some special lines up on the Beach Street slips right now. So they're all usable, but we need to get permanent security on those piles again, and we should have those repaired again within at least the next couple of weeks. Thanks.
Joe, anything from Recreation and Parks?
Honorable Mayor and Council, we had dispatched two employees to assist public services on Friday night during the storm, tree removal from right away and assisting their crews and getting those tree limbs packed up and removed for the safety of the public. In the parks, we had several small trees that were down. The worst were in Bayshore and Morro Cove. Most of the small trees were righted. Larger trees, some are not always righted, but they're thinned out significantly. So we did a lot of tree thinning. The day after was a lot of blowing of the walkways in the parks because of a lot of the downed debris. We did lose one New Zealand Christmas tree at Thailand's Park. That's been removed and already replaced. In the facilities division, we had several buildings, about eight, that had minor leaking. The bigger leaks were at the community center. We had two areas in the back, sunshine room or the multipurpose room. There's a significant leak in the corner there that we're working on, as well as a leak in the back kitchen. And that completes my report.
Okay, and I understand our police chief has exited the building. Okay. Well, I'm assuming they were doing a good job, too.
Just real quick, John's crews were out there all night long as well. His volunteers did a great job staffing barricades to keep the streets closed so people wouldn't enter the areas where there were down power lines and down trees.
Okay, thank you. I did drive around town several times that evening, and I saw the police cars out there. I saw the volunteers out there. I also saw very few branches and things on the streets. The cleanup crews worked so fast. It was amazing. I was very impressed. I just wanted all of you to know what all of these people that work for your city do, and they did it very well during that storm. Okay, closed session report. Rob.
Yes, good evening. Council had a busy closed session. There were four items discussed. They discussed labor negotiations. They also discussed all of the pending litigation that is currently with the city, including Equilon Shell. And they also discussed real property transactions, the Morro Bay Dunes. As to all four of these items, no action was taken that requires reporting under the Brown Act. The last two items regarding personnel issues were not discussed by council due to time constraints.
Thank you. And we will begin our public comment period. Please come forward, speak to something that's not on our public hearing agenda, and limit your comments to 3 minutes, please.
Good evening, Mayor, Council, staff. My name is Keith Taylor, resident of Morro Bay, friend of the Morro Bay Fire Department. I'm here tonight to say thank you to our fire chief, Mike Pond, and to our fire department. This year, they had 1,734 calls, hoping that when that's done, we'll be able to get phase two, and maybe those guys will do the same job because they are doing great work. And I know the chief every day comes in and looks over there and says, whoa, they're doing a lot, you know. So, but I just want to say thank you to the fire department for what they do for us each and every day. Up on the overhead is a graph of the percentage of the calls and what they are. The other thing that we do, which is pretty interesting, we assist in a lot of the wildfires and that were down in Southern California, and we get reimbursed for it, but it's the idea that we have people that are capable and trained. Of course, all the firemen in California are. But we have our OES engine, and we go down and fight the wildfires and do so many other things, which I think is amazing when you look at we're staffed with nine people. So I just want to say thank you to the chief and our fire department. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor. Morro Bay City Council members, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Guy Wallace. I'm the chieftain for the Central Coast Scottish Society. The Central Coast Scottish Society is a nonprofit organization founded in 1983. Our members include Scots, Americans, and Canadians of Scottish heritage and non-Scots alike. Membership to the Central Coast Scottish Society is open to anyone who has a love of, interest in, or passion for Scotland, Scottish history, or Scottish cultural endeavors. I'm here to invite the good folk of Morro Bay and the entire Central Coast to join the Central Coast Scottish Society for an elegant evening of dinner, music, poetry, and all that as we observe Scotland's most celebrated National Day honoring our beloved poet Robert Burns on Saturday, January 26th, at the City of Atascadero's Pavilion on the Lake. This year's gala event features Scotland's own 2004 Singer-Songwriter of the Year, Jim Malcolm. Jim is formerly the lead vocalist and guitarist for the very popular traditional Scottish group, the Old Blind Dogs. He is a treasured resource of Robert Burns in knowledge, spirit, and song. Also center stage this year is the very strong and ever-growing Central Coast Pipes and Drums with special performances planned for this time-honored occasion. Dinner options include traditional roast beef, salmon, or vegetarian Wellington, ordered in advance and served with neeps and tatties, dinner rolls, dessert, beverage. We'll have wine provided with dinner with the very best haggis found in the colonies on every table. Adult tickets are $47. Youth 14 to 20 is $30. Children 13 and under is $20. This is a fundraiser for the endeavors that the Scottish Society underwrites. Social hour starts at 4:30, is from 4:30 to 5:30. The time-honored ceremonies start at 5:45.
The Friends of the Morro Bay Police Department, and we're here particularly tonight to honor Hank Roth. And I've known Hank for about 10 years, I guess. Served with him in Rotary and on various other city civic functions, etc. I'm proud to know Hank. He's a hard worker. He's a good friend. And tonight, when he came up to get his pen from Madam Mayor, I noticed he turned around and bowed to us. That's the first time that's ever happened for me. So, Hank, is he still here? He's gone, by golly. Sorry about that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. And, excuse me, my name is Marla Jo Bruton. I'm from North Morro Bay. I would like to speak to you tonight about some serious concerns regarding due process for cutting trees in the California coastal zone. On Thursday, January 3, Richard Sadowski and I visited Del Mar Park and saw that a large eucalyptus tree was being cut down. We noted that the tree, about half of which had been removed when we arrived, looked as though it had been healthy. We also observed that it contained a visible raptor nest. We asked if the tree cutter had a permit. He had none and asked us to call the city. We called Public Works and were initially told that the tree work we had observed was the responsibility of Parks and Rec, not Public Works. After calling Parks and Rec and receiving no satisfactory response to our concerns, we contacted the California Coastal Commission. I have a slide. According to the Coastal Commission, the cutting of trees in the California coastal zone is subject to statutory due process, which is mandated by environmental law covering, one, all trees that are in the coastal zone, all of Morro Bay is in the coastal zone, two, all trees in environmentally sensitive habitat areas, ESHA, three, all trees serving as raptor habitat. The law requires that a legitimate permit be issued from the city of Morro Bay before trees are cut down. According to the Coastal Commission, it is the responsibility of the director of the Morro Bay Public Works Department to issue the necessary permits. Slide two. There are three basic steps that must be followed before a permit is issued by the Public Works Department. One, an application must be completed and submitted to the City of Morro Bay's Public Works Department. Two, the Public Works Director must submit the application to the Planning Commission for discussion and decision. Three, the Planning Commission must vote to approve or deny the application. Only after the Planning Commission approves an application is a permit issued to the applicant, and only then can a tree be removed. If a permit is issued, then the tree cutter and the city should be able to show a copy of the permit upon request. The Director of Public Works, Bruce Anbo, is responsible for overseeing the due process cycle and making sure it is carried out as prescribed by environmental law. There is only one exception to the law, and that is the determination that there is an immediate threat to health and safety. This one exception is a discretionary decision that is not meant to be abused. We believe that in this case it was. No permit was issued, and the tree was not, in our opinion, dead, as we were told. We believe that there was no immediate health and safety.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, City Council members. My name is Danny Tope, and I am a property owner in Morro Bay. This evening, I am speaking to you as I am on the board of directors for the drug and alcohol in San Luis Obispo County. Excuse me. I'm a little bit tired. I've been traveling. A few weeks ago, I brought to your attention a LEED course that I picked up the booklets today at ABC. And it's an alcohol training book. It's a 4-hour class that people should have. This is a proposal for an ordinance that's already been passed by Solana Beach. They were the first ones that passed the no smoking beaches. Then it came up the coast as far as Morro Bay. These people are the best. They're very proactive. Anyway, this I am going to go around to all of the city councils in the county, and I'm with you first because I'm more comfortable here. But the purpose and intent is to prevent the overservice and overconsumption of alcohol by customers while on the premises of licensed vendors. Two, reduce alcohol-related crashes, injuries, and deaths that often result from driving while intoxicated. Three, eliminate the sale and or consumption of alcohol by underaged persons. Four, assist licensed vendors to develop and implement responsible policies for the promotion, sales, and service of alcohol. Five, and promote an attitude of professionalism on the part of the vendors who serve and sell alcohol. This is for, it's a center for prevention for high-risk drinking. I have given these copies to Bridget, so they'll all be in your little boxes tomorrow. And if anyone has any questions, I do have packets here from ABC. It's a really good thing. It would really help the police department. All it will do is educate the servers, and it will mandate that someone with this course is on premise at all times while alcohol is served. That means George League's going to have to take the course, okay? It's pretty simple, you know, just one person. And if that person should leave or management doesn't have the license, then the facility could be closed down. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council. My name is John Bart. I'd like to speak on three topics tonight. The first one is item D2. I want to give my wholehearted support for a regulation of news racks in certain locations on the Embarcadero. This was a topic of great interest to the Planning Commission when I served on it for a number of years, and it's good to see the city back on track on this issue. If you need any additional photos of the historical growth of news racks on the Embarcadero, I certainly have them. Then on item D3, chain stores. While I'm not a particular fan of chain stores myself, I have to say that it sure would be nice if you'd focus more energy on helping the businesses that are already here. If you could please define what is a chain store. Is Trader Joe's a chain store? Is Applebee's a chain store? What's a chain store? But I don't really think you have to move on to a runoff election in the fall. So have at it. Think about running for council. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so I'm shorter than him. good evening. My name is Joan Solu. I'm a resident, and I own the Days Inn at the corner of Beach and Main Street. I'm here tonight to address the discussion on a ballot measure to increase the transient occupancy tax, or TOT. My husband John and I believe that a 2% increase in the TOT would place Morro Bay severely out of line with other cities in Slo County. For example, all other cities in the county are at 10%, and the unincorporated areas of the county are at 9%. That's Cayucas. In addition, as noted in the staff report, Morro Bay has just agreed to participate in the VCB BID, which will increase the tax per room night to 11%. If you push a 2% increase, Morro Bay would be the only city in the entire county at 13%. Okay. So if you decide to go to the 13%, what's your catalyst? Is it the fact that Morro Bay has the lowest occupancy rate in the entire county? No, that's not a good reason to raise rate. Oh, could it be that Morro Bay has the lowest ADR, average daily rate per room night in the county? No, that's not a good reason either. Okay. Maybe it's so we can be level with other large cities in California, like the ones mentioned in the staff report. After all, we are 10,000 people strong here. So let's see. That means we would nearly be in the tax boat with San Francisco, which has the Golden Gate Bridge and Alcatraz, or Inglewood with LAX, or Beverly Hills in Los Angeles with all of their theaters, cultural, and sporting events, or lastly, Anaheim with Disneyland. Yes. Increasing our TOT by 2% brings us close to being in the same tax boat with Mickey Mouse. I'm sorry. I just have to say that I don't see any of those as good reasons, especially in light of the fact that our city is struggling to occupy the rooms which we already have at rates that match the other cities in our own county.
Then there's the perception that this tax increase would be placed on consumers from out of the area, so it doesn't really matter. To this, I say phooey. Consumers are smart. They check rates. They shop around. For a room with $150 a night rate, the TOT would be $1,950, a total of $169.50 a room. Again, I'm going to ask you, what's the attraction? Please realize that I'm just trying to run a business here, but I'm getting the feeling that my beloved city is not business friendly. It's frustrating for me and my staff to have to explain TOT all the time at 10% as it is. I can only imagine how much more taxing being a tax collector for you would be if you go forward with this measure and it passes. So I'm asking you to reconsider and to give the hoteliers a year with the BID to promote our city, look for the increase in TOT that way, through an increase in occupancy and increased ADR through promotion. And now I ask, please don't compare our city to the cities with millions of citizens and huge attractions. If you do, you are comparing blueberries to watermelons. Finally, let me say I am tired of speaking and not being heard. So if you're listening, all I am saying is look at the whole picture.
Our tourists. Prices for dining, lodging, and other tourist activities will increase as businesses attempt to pass on costs, such as the rising sewer costs, to their customers. The typical Morro Bay tourist is not as upscale and is especially price sensitive. And as was alluded to in the previous speaker, hotel occupancy rates are historically low in Morro Bay than in surrounding markets. Given this scenario, I cannot see how the council can champion an increase in the occupancy tax rate. A 12% rate would, as was stated, place us at the highest level in the county, but also in the upper echelons in the whole state of California. For RV parks, the increase is extremely disconcerting since state-owned parks, county-owned parks, and private parks in the county are exempt from the transient occupancy tax. The competitive disadvantage is not shared with the hotel industry and was among the reasons why RV parks requested to be excluded from the BID. We likewise request that you exclude RV parks from a TOT increase should the council decide on a ballot measure. In addition to San Luis Obispo County, several other jurisdictions in California exclude parks from the TOT, including Monterey and Los Angeles counties. And Morro Bay also included parks until the 1980s. So in all, the TOT increase, I don't think it's good for Morro Bay's economy, whether you're a motel or an RV park, and because of the special set of circumstances the RV parks have in the competitive arena, we request that you exclude them from any further increase. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Kelly Vandenhuvel, and I'm with Pacific Wildlife Care. And I just came here this evening. This is my first time to make sure everybody knows about our organization. We've been serving this county for 25 years. I'm a founding member, and we opened our Wildlife Rehabilitation Center here in Morro Bay in May in the city of Morro Bay. And we're taking in a lot of birds and animals. We've done over 1,000 this year from the county. And basically, we handle any wildlife emergency rescue. Our goal is to rehabilitate and release these animals back into the wild. This weekend, we'll be at the Winter Bird Festival if anybody would like more information. We also have a website, which is pacificwildlifecare.org. And want to make sure everybody knows about us. Thank you.
Tell us a little more about this Saturday, because I forgot to announce that.
Yes.
You got time.
Yeah, this weekend, the kickoff is Friday night, the opening reception. We will have a booth there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And
the show here.
And the show here also on Sunday, right? Or is it Saturday?
Saturday, yeah.
Meet the Raptors, and we'll have three shows that day.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, council members, city staff. I'm Peter Candela with the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce. And part of the responsibility of the chamber is not only to promote our local economy and bring in tourism and for the benefit of our membership and our community, but we also have a function of advising and maybe educating when we have the opportunity to do so. Part of my position as a CEO, it could support a tax. But if we get into the 2% and 3% increases, we should do this with caution. We should just be aware that maybe we need to educate a little bit more on the true effects of how this is going to filter down into our community. So the reason I'm here tonight is just to maybe open some eyes about, let's look at the TOT and let's see if there's possibly a better way to generate some income, because I think increasing it to a level is something that we better do in caution. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Michelle Hawkes, and I'm the regional manager for the Bartfield Motel Group. We own the Best Western San Marcos Inn, the El Moro Masterpiece Motel, and the Lost Arena Inn. I'm here basically to oppose the ballot measure for the TOT increase. Heard other reasons as to why. I would like to point them out again. We currently right now are in with all the other cities. We would be the highest if we were to increase it anymore. We currently, as a city of Morro Bay, in the county, we have the lowest occupancy percentage and the lowest ADR. If you have the lowest occupancy and ADR, we should be striving to get higher ADR and higher occupancy. That would then increase the TOT money to the city. By increasing the TOT tax, that is not going to bring in any more people into Morro Bay. And I think that it would benefit if we were to try to raise the ADR and raise the occupancy and get more people in here, which will not only benefit the hotels, it will benefit the restaurants, the shops, and not just retail restaurants and, you know, retail shops, but every glass shop, you know, everywhere across the board. It helps the entire city, not just one department. We need to be attracting more visitors and not deterring them. We've just added more rooms into Paso Robles. San Luis Obispo's added these as well. We are in competition with these other cities throughout the county, and we need to remember that. People constantly ask, what is your TOT? That's the number one question asked after you give them the rate, so that's very important. Trying to not be too repetitive. You know, a lot of us hotels spend thousands of dollars on advertising. We try to promote the city to bring in more visitors and more, you know, by doing this TOT, I think you're just really not helping the city in any way. We just had a sales tax increase. We've had a minimum wage increase. Gas prices are up. You know, let's push to spend more monies at the hotel level and promoting and getting more people in here again instead of just raising taxes on people. People are smart. They know they're going to go to another city. Also, the staff report stated that there would be an additional $375,000. This is actually not true, because if we have less people coming into the city of Morro Bay, TOT is actually going to decrease, even if there may be that one percentage. As we all have been, I've been in the industry since the early 90s, we've seen TOT go up and down. It goes up with what the economy is doing. There are signs right now that the economy is not doing well. I can vouch for it for the month of January so far. And if they continue to decline, TOT is going to go down. It's not going to benefit us to raise our TOT at this time when we've got all these other things that we're having to, as hotelers, we're not raising rates because minimum wages went up. We're not raising rates because gas prices went up. And we're being hit a lot more with expenses. But we're trying to get people in here. So,
Honorable Counsel, I am very concerned about the water situation in regards to our present strategy towards what I see as a big problem in the future. Desalination is the most expensive form of water procurement that you can have. I do not believe we should increase desalination. I think we should decrease it. But yet we are increasing it. We're doubling the size. We're spending $700,000, I believe, to double the size of desalination. If we should have an energy crunch, even worse than the crunch that we're having now, $100 barrel, $3 gasoline, if we should have a war, a recession, et cetera, it could go up to $200 a barrel. This will increase the cost of desalinated water. I think our strategy is incorrect. I think we should look into supplying our water resources that we have, the wells. I'm glad to see that there's a proposal about checking on the nitrate situation of the water. If it is correctly done, that's good. Transparency. There's a problem with transparency with our administration. I know that a report was done. It was supposed to come in October, November. We haven't seen it yet on the well situation. I thought that we got that transparency problem solved. I thought that the administration was going to tell us what we need to know so that we can make decisions. Instead, we're on a spending spree again, $700,000, and that's not counting the amount of money that we will spend in energy which could double in price. This is a very serious consideration. I'm not criticizing the administration. I suspect they're doing a very good job. But the city council is responsible for the strategy. And without transparency, without discussion, without openness, the people are not being served. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council, staff. My name is Jim Phillips. I'm a resident of Morro Bay and a member of the Harbor Advisory Board. And I'm here tonight to speak in an encouraging way to eventually develop or have the city, most of which face the water and both have create, for instance, a obstruction, a safety obstruction, I think, in terms of traffic and pedestrian traffic. But more importantly, in my mind at least, an aesthetically unacceptable eyesore, if you will. The 93 racks that exist, or approximately 93 racks that exist, are the housing of about a dozen newspaper or news-related periodicals of one kind or another, of which about six are newspapers. And it creates an unsightly view, and all I would do, would have you do to show it to you for yourself would be just to take a look as you go around the corner by Giovanni's, or to look at either Pacific or Marina N Street, and look out towards the water, and of course you see what is the beauty of the bay. But before you see that, you see the line of newspaper racks. They are not well maintained. They are dirty, and many of them are in poor condition. What the ordinance would ask permission to do, I guess, is the way to put that, would be to relocate those. Not to diminish them, not to make them less available to the people who want them, but to consolidate them and to put them in a much more aesthetically pleasing situation. Rick Algert, I guess, will speak to this issue later on as the agenda item comes up, and I would encourage members of the council to support his effort. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Good evening, members of the council, staff, and Morro Bay residents. My name is Noah Smuckler. I'm involved with the San Luis Bay chapter of the Surf Rider Foundation, member of the Public Works Advisory Board, and speaking tonight as a citizen of Morro Bay. Actually, tonight I'd like to voice my support and thanks to the council and staff for item A4. It's a resolution to look into our water supply and the quality and the potential nitrate contamination of our water supply and specifically our wells. As we all know, water is a vital resource for the community health and it's something that's becoming ever more of a challenge to supply to our residents and also more expensive. So along those lines, when we look at our water supply, we need to find ways to creatively make this vital resource affordable and stable for the long term. So one of the steps that we can take besides conservation efficiency is to maintain and restore the quality of our groundwater, which traditionally has been one of our top resources locally, and recently we're seeing a decline of the quality of that water. And that's something that we can't let go on. And so the study that the city has already followed through with and is actually about to present regarding our Chora or the Moro Valley.
All right. There were a couple of comments. We'll bring it back to council. There was a couple of comments, one about the tree cutting and one about the well report. Who would like to respond to those?
I'd be happy to add what we can on the public services end of the equation.
Okay.
We agreed with the park staff. We went out and verified those same trees. They were dead. We called the Coastal Commission and told them that was our opinion. Not even an opinion. It was pretty clear to us that those trees were dead. And dead, dying, or diseased trees don't trigger a permit. And it was a safety issue because those trees were next to a public parking lot and a residence. So we agreed with that determination, and that's our responsibility to make those calls when trees are dead, diseased, or dying. And as you know, park staff has been in the business of maintaining our parks ever since we've been established. We trust their judgment. And just to follow up on this, we did go out, not only me, but another, I think a couple other people went out from our staff too. So it's not one of those situations where we didn't have a thorough understanding of the situation.
Okay. And then the well report about the nitrates, when is that going to come back?
There are some issues that we would prefer to discuss in a closed session that we'll leave to the city attorney that were brought up in that analysis.
But along with that study that's been done, with any document that's a study, when that's prepared, it's first in an administrative draft, and it's looked at as an administrative draft, and then it's finalized and made public. That's with any report from any consultant that goes on to make sure there's not any factual inaccuracies in that document before it's released, and that's where it's at right now. It's in a draft form. It will be released fairly shortly. I think we can get through it. It's on my desk now being reviewed, and once it goes through that process, it will be presented to the public and presented to you. There are issues in that document, though, that we'll discuss in closed session as to the responsible parties for the nitrate issue.
Okay. Any other responses from council? And I did just, I'm sorry, I have to put on a different hat now, and say that the Bird Festival is sponsoring an open to the public event this Saturday, the Pacific Wildlife Care, right here in this building. They're going to have owls and kestrels and falcons, and you're all welcome to come. Tickets are $2 for adults, $1 for children, and it is open to the public Saturday, 1 o'clock, 2:30, 4 o'clock. Thank you. We'll take a short break, and then we'll come back. Thank you.
That agreement, which started in 1989, is due to expire in the year 2009, which was obviously it's a 20-year agreement. And at that time, there were certain areas of responsibility that both the city and the seniors shared. Those responsibilities are very similar in the proposed agreement that you have attached to your staff report. I wanted to focus your attention on the financial impact on this agreement, starting at the beginning of this term of this agreement, which would be in 2009. The seniors would have 10 days to contribute $25,000 to the city of Morro Bay for the efforts on maintaining the senior center and the community center, and other responsibilities that are undetermined as far as financial impact would be the utilities and the maintenance and upkeep of the senior center. Staff is recommending that you review the and approve the proposed senior center agreement and authorize the mayor and city clerk to sign the agreement on behalf of the city. That concludes my report.
Any questions for Joe? Betty?
Yes, a couple of questions, or a couple of pages. On page one, at the bottom, under our Article 1, letter B, I think I've compared correctly that this used to say operate and control, and now it just says operate and schedule. Is there a reason to take the lounge and game room control away from the seniors?
It's not a matter of taking the control away. The discretion of the use is mainly the city of Morro Bay's, and our discretion is we often we go in and we would ask for the usage for the EOC operations. We also have various other programs that come in that we would need space for mandated meetings. So it isn't a matter of taking over the control. It's just a matter of having them operate and schedule.
Because I thought the game room was pretty much only for games, and then the lounge room was not used as frequently as the multi-purpose room.
Well, the word control is really giving away and showing ownership, and the ownership of the senior center is with the city of Morro Bay. So the control of the use should remain ours. Mm-hmm. The operating and scheduling would be the seniors.
Okay. I kind of get that.
Okay.
At the top of that page, it says the year 2007. Should that be 2009?
No, the agreement's entered into now in 2007. 2008, I'm sorry.
So they're going to sign it early?
It should be 2008. Whatever day is signed, we'll do it then, but it doesn't take effect until 2009.
Until 2009. Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. On, excuse me, this page 2, Article 3, letter C, it talks about...
The seniors are using city facilities, mm-hmm. and our agreement is a minimal cost,
mm-hmm.
and basically... We're not charging them at all for their use. They mm-hmm. have programs down at the vets hall. They've got programs sometimes at the library mm-hmm. program room, and there's been no cost. Mm-hmm. Recently, we've had some classes brought in through Cuesta, the emeritus programs, mm-hmm. and we have a minimal fee. We've charged them direct costs.
Mm-hmm.
So the direct costs aren't illustrated on the master fee schedule, but mm-hmm. they are part of our fee schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't something that we would open up to the public, but something that we would entertain to charge the seniors at whatever date we decided to.
Okay. And obviously they're fine with that because they agreed to that.
That's correct.
On page 3, this is just minor, under Article 6, should that first sentence read, seniors shall not transfer or assign this agreement or any other or any part thereof? Should there be another or in there? Okay.
Yeah, we could add or there.
And then this, I think my last question is on page 4, and it's under Article 2, Agreement in Writing. And it's just a little confusing. I know it's actually written exactly as it was in the old contract, but in the first paragraph it talks about agreements to be signed by the mayor and clerk, and then the next paragraph it talks about not until it's approved by the senior boards and the city council. So... Is the first paragraph just saying that when it finally gets approved, then it goes to the mayor and the clerk?
Yes.
Okay, so it might be just in reverse order. Okay. That's it. Thank you. Oh, I do have one question. To me, the major change, it seems to me, is regard the liability insurance, and that before that wasn't, it was offered or they could do it at option, but now it's being required. Is that the major change in this contract?
No, the insurance has always been required.
But the liability insurance, I didn't see that in the original contract. I read it as optional.
No, it wasn't. The optional part of their liability insurance is buying it from us through either Diversified or Driver Alliant, or providing their own. That option has always been an option. They've chosen not to exercise that option. But the requirement for liability insurance has always been there.
Okay. So on page 6 of the original agreement, which is the next to the last page on our staff report, it says seniors may elect to provide liability insurance through city-provided agreement to extend its general liability insurance to the seniors. So that's the new part that's mandatory?
That's the option that they could exercise.
And it's still an option?
It is still an option.
That's not the way I read it.
Actually, I'm going to jump in on that. In the new agreement, we have not put that in because when the city originally entered into this agreement, there was a possibility that the city could extend their liability insurance. Mm-hmm. As you know, currently we cannot extend our liability insurance, our general liability insurance, to other nonprofit organizations.
And it's for the duration of the contract, which is a 20-year term.
But how long has it been? $25,000, I'm saying.
No, currently. This is a contribution that was established for this agreement. The current agreement has different strings attached to it. It was a contribution of $100,000, but also it links the two organizations together to allow us to get bond funds, Senior Bond Act funds. So bringing the senior citizens in to the community center allows us for variety of funding. Currently, that obligation has ceased. It was a 20-year obligation, so that's going to be ceased. So there's no obligation to maintain the senior center. However, we have done so for like 7 years before and the current 20 years. So a contribution of some sort was kind of mutually agreed upon through the negotiations with the Senior Citizens Incorporated.
Has it been cost-effective as far as the city? Is it paying? Has it been paying the bills, in other words, for what the city has had to put forward?
It's hard to say. We don't meter the senior center separately from the community center. So utility bills are all combined, maintenance as well. So as far as their contributions to maintaining the senior center, it's been well beyond what we expected. They've contributed over $11,000 on carpet replacement. I think it was last year, the year before, we came to you for funds to replace HVAC units, and the Senior Citizens Incorporated contributed over $5,000. So they continue to contribute for major expenses when they can, and I think that at the $25,000 mark, they're feeling that that's what they can extend as a nonprofit group given their current resources.
They also contribute a lot of volunteer hours.
Yeah, the 800 hours is an obligated number that they have to contribute, and that goes through a variety of programs that they get credit for.
Okay. Melody, any questions?
Yeah, probably clarifications for me at the end of these questions. So I understand now why the liability insurance has been, we can't cover them. Okay. And just to clarify, they don't pay a monthly or yearly rent in addition to this. This is just a one-time payment, and then that secures the 20-year lease.
That's correct.
Okay. And then when you talked about this undetermined dollar amount with all the custodial maintenance, we're not thinking about charging them for any of that, are we?
No, we haven't, but you have to realize that for leaving that out, you would bring up, hey, don't we have costs to maintaining? And yes, there are costs. We just haven't outline them in this report.
No. And then Councilmember Winholz brought up Article 3 there on page 2 of this new agreement about this agreed-upon rate for the seniors' use of center and other city facilities. And I think you had said that they are able to do that, as able to schedule probably those facilities at zero right now. And so now it's going to be an agreed-upon rate. True?
That's correct.
Okay. I would say
to speak on this issue, please come forward.
I think one thing that would help is that the only
thing...
We
need your name first.
Okay. Is that all right?
We need you to say your name.
The only part of the building that is ours...
Okay. We need you to say your name. That's what I was trying to say.
Oh, you want to know who I am?
Yeah.
My name is Norma Vaughn. I'm a longtime resident and of Morro Bay, a member of the seniors. I'm the past president and past everything else. So you name it, I've been there. This agreement was made, it isn't a whole lot different than the very first agreement that was set up back in when they built this, the rec department. You have to realize the recreation center was paid for, almost half it was paid for, and was not have been built if it wasn't for the money that we contributed, cash deposit, the $100,000 in cash, but also $277,000 in grants, senior grants that built that building. So I don't think we would, if you own part of a building, you don't pay rent on it. Now, this is what we had really hard, difficult time getting through. The $25,000 is not, to the other members of the group, is not for rent. It's for future maintenance of the building. And that any building that you have or you own, including your house, you're going to have repairs, and those repairs are going to have to be paid. And part of that responsibility would be to the owners of the building, which I've always considered as a co-owner. When you think of it as that, instead of just joint use, you know, they have use of the whole entire building, and the only part of the building that we have control over is the office and the workroom. Right? So you did real well, I felt. And is there any more? I mean, I'd be happy to answer the question. We've had a good, ever since I've been a member of the seniors, I don't know how long it's been, but we've had a very good working relationship. We help whenever they need help, and they help us when we need help. I don't think we've ever come to blows. No, I mean, we've... We've always been, you know, if they say that they need help, we help them. Either not only monetarily, but we'll help them physically, like working the spaghetti feed. I went up and folded up new papers, you know, and I was going to work the Christmas lights, but I forgot to. Forgot what it was. So it's not only that. Like he says, we put 800 hours in. For the use of the building too.
Okay, since we don't have other people in the audience, does anybody want to ask Norma any questions? Or she responded to all your concerns? Okay.
And the reason why we have our own insurance is cheaper than the city's. We used to be with the same insurance company, but we were not. We weren't on their policy, and they asked us to do that. But I want you to know that it's our first time. I felt that the tax money that I paid went for something I really like.
Thank you, and it was mostly grant money. Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak on this issue? All right, we'll bring it back to council. Comments? Bill, you want to start?
I just want to make a motion when everybody's ready to do it.
Okay. Okay, I think we're ready.
Go ahead. Okay, I've got to find what it's called. How about if I just say move approval of B1?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. Thank you very much.
I would just express my appreciation to the seniors and to staff for negotiating this contract. I know it took several months.
Absolutely. It's a good
cooperation. And don't break your hip. Ride safely. Okay, we'll move on. We're going to go to item C1 now, which is the Back Bay and Chevron Beachfront Property Annexation Process. Bruce?
Yes, Madam Mayor and Council Members. You asked that this item come back under a future agenda item, and here it is before you. We're really outlining the specifics of the annexation process and some of the key things that we need to accomplish before we can even begin the process. This, as you indicated, involves the Back Bay, about 100 acres of the Back Bay, and the small portion of the Chevron property at the northerly city limits that has been earmarked in previous discussions through the Local Agency Formation Commission, Municipal Service Review, Sphere of Influence process. And as you may recall, those are the two areas that were modified in our sphere of influence and earmarked for the Back Bay to protect for some level of interest, and then the dog park proposal that was discussed. I can kind of get down to what we need to do to even enter the process. We need to get the property owner's authorization. If we don't have the property owner's authorization, in this case, for the Chevron property, it would be Chevron. And then for the Back Bay, it would be the State Lands Commission. And we're kind of going through that process with them now with the State Park Marina EIS product that we're under review with. So it could be rather lengthy. But to make a long story short, if we don't get the property owner's authorization, they won't even consider the annexation proposal. If we ever do get the property owners to agree, then we would need to file an application and pay the application fees, and they're about $6,500. That process would range anywhere from 6 to 9 months, with our staff doing quite a bit of the work with their staff. And then what we're saying is we'd be happy to do that, just sort through the priority. If you want to put this on the top, then we would. All that just means is that everything else would be reordered underneath it. As you know, we got direction in our proceeding and are underway with annexing all of the city's well sites in the Cherrell Valley and some of the adjoining sites, tank sites in the city limits. So that's something we're also doing. But the funding source we had for that was water funds. Right now, we don't have a funding source identified for this. And so as a city, we're actually dealing with some of that issue now just to do some of the dredging. And so that's been several months that we've been working with it. So even to begin those negotiations with these properties would take a commitment of staff time and effort, not including if we ever do get the permission to proceed, allocating the funding to apply for the application. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
All right.
I have just one financial question. When you talk about the under your physical impact paragraph, where you say the $6,500, and that's what it's costing to do all of those well sites right now, so you can lump them, or is that per property?
No, we already authorized the funds for the previous annexation, and these funds are over and above what we're already underway with.
I think I'm asking a different question. I need to say it more directly. If we talk about annexing part of the bay and annexing a beach property, which are two different properties, if we do them simultaneously, is that $6,500, or will each one of them be $6,500?
It's collect total.
It's collective.
For both.
Okay.
Right.
So to bring them in under the current process, it's too late to do that, so they could be subsumed?
The annexation fees based on acreage.
On acreage, okay. That's
so
what I need to know.
That's why the number is high. And we actually are still preparing the application. We mm-hmm. have to do field notes, legal descriptions. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty lengthy process and a significant commitment of our staff resources and time to do all of the stuff just to make the application.
Thanks.
Well, I guess I'd like to piggyback on that then. If we were to get the consent of these property owners, would it be advantageous to do it all at once, or is that going to hold up our well annexations or well site annexations?
I don't know. It may make some sense to put them together. When we do, I would just I'd be tempted to send the wells through on their own because they're okay. A separate subset.
Right.
It's really not. These are facilities and not usable property okay. for land uses.
It's part, I'll chime in. As part of it, you have to go through what the fiscal impact of annexing these in, and the well sites will be very small because there really isn't any fiscal impact that we're not already maintaining those sites, whereas with the Back Bay and the other Chevron property, there would be fiscal impacts of servicing those areas. I guess the question I have, which usually with annexation, this is kind of an odd subject matter in that usually with annexation, there's a reason why you're doing it. That's usually because there's development there or you're trying to obtain some type of income from that producing property or there's a need or reasoning for it. And I guess the question I would have is why do you want to annex these two properties in? You would certainly have more of a service area to cover in the Back Bay, and Rick could speak to that. And then you've got another area on the Chevron property that you would now have issues of environmentally concerned snowy plover issues. So I guess the question council can maybe talk about is why would the city be undertaking this at this point in time?
Okay. Melody?
I think that Back Bay annexation was suggested a couple of years ago, really to push hunting back away from the city limits more. And
that's somewhat of a misperception on both those issues and what exactly annexation will do. In the Back Bay, it certainly might give us a more control over the hunting issue, but you still have a higher agency and has their rules under fish and game. But certainly there we that might help, but I wouldn't say it would be the end-all just because we annex in the Back Bay. We can therefore prevent hunting. It might give us more leverage, but I think the leverage is still with fish and game. As far as annexing in a piece of property on Chevron, that does nothing to give us more ability to make it a dog park. It's still owned by a private entity, and if they were to grant it to the state simply because it's within our city boundaries, doesn't allow us to say what can transpire there. We all know that dogs aren't allowed on the beach within the city limits that's owned by the state. So really it goes to who's owned. I think that's kind of the perception people assume once you annex property and you now own it, that we still don't own it. It's still owned by a third party.
No, I'm not going to go into the dog thing. I'll let Ms. Winholz take care of that. But the thing about the annexation, Mr. Schultz, if we extend our city limits out through an annexation process on the Back Bay, we have a law that forbids the firing of firearms in this city. True. And that's all I'm saying.
And state law can certainly trump that law.
Mm-hmm. So of course they try to.
Well, I'll just add why I was interested in push for annexation of these two properties. And certainly the northern properties were for control. I think that if you're in city property, we get to set the rules rather than the county or the state. The rumor has been for several years that when Chevron decommissions the land, that it will go to the county. And the county has been very straightforward to us in their recreation department saying that they would turn it over to state parks. They don't want it. And state parks has been very forward in saying if it comes to us, we will kick the dogs off the beach. So I think it's been in the interest of the public that we wanted to do that. I understand that there will be other hoops to go through, but I think this is the first step to say we may want to be able to allow or provide for the county and the public an off-leash dog beach. In terms of the Back Bay, certainly hunting is one of the issues, but I think the other is for me and Mr. Algert already and his staff already does the monitoring of that part of the bay. In fact, most of the bay, because fish and game is not present. And because we do that kind of monitoring, I think we should get to set the regs, and therefore that brings it again into our control. Whether we want to put in more boat slips or choose not to, whether we have to negotiate that with state lands, I understand that's all very nebulous. But I think this is the first step in that process.
Okay.
I have a question based on something Ms. Winholz just said. If, in fact, we annex the land and Chevron decommissions it, gives it to the county, and the county gives it to the state, it's in our city limits, but we're still screwed, right?
Yes. There's no difference there. The only way we would have control, which would be the same, is Chevron decommissions it and gives it to the city,
right,
which would which whether it's annexed in or not, then you have some control over the property. But again, that's where annexation, there's a misnomer that when you annex in, you now have control over the property. You don't.
I agree, and that's why I asked it be agendized for us to at least find out where do we stand with the property owners, what their process is, what they were going to require from us. And so I'm just interested tonight in saying let's write the letter or the two letters.
Another question for the city attorney. With Fish and Game, if we annex the back bay, do we really have any control, or do they still tell us what they're going to do back there?
It certainly it doesn't hurt, but I don't want there to be the perception out there that by annexing in the Chevron property, automatically we get a dog park, or by annexing the back bay, we're automatically going to stop hunting, because that is not a correct perception.
And I get that.
I think that's the basis of the letters. We could even write Fish and Game and say, if we annex this, because we've been talking about it, what impact does that have on your regulations or hunting or anything like that, and see what the patent line comes out of Sacramento is. Let's say, you know, like no impact, or we can talk, and that might satisfy everybody's interest to know without throwing the Public Services Department full tilt into this thing and expending a lot of energy.
Okay. Rick?
I would support directing staff to ask the property owners if they'd like to be annexed into the city.
Okay.
And I agree with that.
So that's a motion and a second?
Just a fact.
Okay. Like motion by Mr. Grant.
You want to do it?
Yeah. The motion would be to direct staff to inquire with the property owners to see if they would agree to be annexed into the city.
Second.
Okay. Any more discussion?
Yeah, I do a little bit. That doesn't answer any of the questions.
I know that.
Okay. You want to do that as a separate letter later? Or?
No, this is the first step, and that's the step I'd like to take.
Go from that.
Well, I think I'd like to withdraw my second and hear those questions again that you're concerned about, Mr. Pierce. Do you want to just lay out a couple of the questions?
Well, the questions I had was, if we send the letter to Chevron, it'd be, would you like to have us annex the property? And if at some point you decide to decommission it, would you consider donating it to the city rather than the county? You know, that to me would follow along with that, would be the question I'd ask.
Would you consider, Mr. Grantham, adding those to your motion?
I don't have an opposition to that. I was just thinking mainly of a first step to get this started.
Okay, I'll second that then.
Okay. So the motion will be not only to inquire about whether they want to be annexed, but whether they would be agreeable to us having some control once they were annexed. Right?
That would be with Chevron. Yeah. Maybe we ought to do these as two separate motions, because I don't think you could ask that same question of state lands.
Well,
Mr. Schultz, will you be writing these letters, or will Ms. Luker?
We'll work on it together.
Okay. So you know what we're talking about, right?
Yes. With Chevron, we'll not only be asked if they want to be annexed in, but if you did agree to that process also, or even if you don't, inquire about when you decommission the property. If you do donate it, the city is a willing participate in obtaining ownership of that property. And with regards to the Back Bay, asking State Lands Commission actually about whether they would want to annex in. The problem you have there is really the Fish and Game.
And if I could just throw in, I did speak with someone from State Lands probably 6 months ago about this issue, and he said as long as you and Fish and Game work something out, we're agreeable to whatever. So I think they're amenable to a letter.
Okay. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. Let's move to consent agenda then, because we have staff here for that. And anybody want to pull anything on consent?
I'd like to pull A2 and A6.
Okay.
And I think we have to pull A1.
Okay. Anyone else? I'm looking for my agenda so I know what I'm talking about.
I would move approval of A1, 3, 4, no.
A1 was pulled.
Excuse me. A3, 4, 5, 7.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. Melody, A1.
A1 is the minutes from our last meeting and simply required a couple of amendments. One was an amendment on the public hearing that we had on the bed and breakfast at Beach Street, the proposal for that. And it was an addition, added sentence called, further discussion also revealed that the bedroom design for the applicant's upstairs housing unit was not legally designed under the city's zoning codes. And then Mayor Peters asked for a correction to B3, reconsideration of payment to the Visitors and Conference Bureau. And she changed the wording of it to now say, and have the VCB review the fair share formula based on the percentage the transient occupancy tax represents of each city's total general fund revenue. And I would move approval then with those amendments of A1.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? None. Okay. And A2. Betty.
A2 is the City Council annual regular meeting schedule for 2008. There's three changes I'd like to propose.
Is not that. Betty.
No. Oh, I'm on A6. I apologize. Yep. Thank you. A2 is the annual review and approval investment policy. And there's a couple of grammatical things I won't mention, but I can say just later. But the one thing I would like to change is on page 2. And it's in the latter half of the page under standard of care where it says ethics and conflict of interest. I'd like to suggest that we change the word should to shall.
Okay. Any other?
For the public, I probably should read that out loud. The treasurer
probably.
And designated staff, currently it says, should refrain from personal business activities that could conflict. And I thought it should be a little stronger and that the staff shall refrain from personal business activities.
Okay. Anyone else? Any other comments or corrections? Additions?
Does that create an issue for the treasurer?
No, not at all. That's fine.
Okay.
Okay. You want to make a motion?
And I believe last year suggested that we do it in July. I'd like to remove that. I think that we should meet in July. And so my discussion is that that should be removed. Under item number 2, talks about the two fifth Mondays when we can meet with the Planning Commission. The first fifth Monday that's available is March 31st, which is over 2.5 months away. We'll have our new Planning Commission in another 10 days. And so I would suggest that rather than meet on a special fifth Monday, that we meet earlier prior to a regular Planning Commission meeting, like on the 18th or the 3rd, 18th of February or the 3rd of March. Move it up a month. I think there's a number of issues to talk about, and I would rather not wait another 2.5 months to meet with them. My third suggestion isn't a suggestion, but just to point out that I didn't realize that in February, if you look on the back where your calendar is, that the week of February 10th, the city council meeting's on the 11th. The 12th is a city holiday, and the JPA is proposed on the 13th. Makes for kind of a busy week. I don't know if council is comfortable with that. I'd much rather have the holiday on the Monday than the Tuesday, but I just wanted to point out that that little busy crowdedness is happening there.
Do we have two city holidays there? So Lincoln's birthday and then President's Day. Okay. Well, I have to say I agree with combining the meeting with the Planning Commission. We've done that before. I think it works very well. Okay. I don't think we need to have extra meetings for it. So I'm in agreement with that. How about the rest of you?
I agree with that also because I do think there are some important issues that have been coming up at their meetings that we should probably weigh in on. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good idea. And I think we had a pre-meeting with them once before, and it worked
mm-hmm.
fine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So. I would think the first Planning Commission meeting after we do the selection process, we should maybe eliminate or or give them a very light schedule and spend part of that time meeting with them so they can ask questions and figure out where we and they want to go.
So that would be February 18th, I believe, or February 4th. Would they have one then, Mr. Ambo?
The meetings are the 4th and the 18th. Okay. I'm not sure when you expect your appointments to be completed.
Yeah, we haven't done that date yet.
Well, they'll they be done by the end of January.
Then. Yeah.
Then it might be good. Well, you think about orienting and all, but we only have, I think, one vacancy at least that I know of today on the Planning Commission.
And he's reapplying, from what I understand. So it may not even be a new commission.
18th should be okay then.
18th? Okay. Okay, so we'll have a joint meeting on the 18th. And do you want to start that at 5, Council?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they can... The holiday, so it's going to be the 2nd.
Let's shoot for the 15th.
Okay. Okay, so that's September 15th. We'll also do a joint meeting starting at 5 o'clock. All right, so that figures out that part of it. That's item 2. Item 3, is there any problem with the JPA meeting? Have we got Cayucas on board for that? If so, I'd say we shouldn't change it.
Yeah, let's leave that alone then if everybody agrees.
I'm sorry. It's my understanding that meeting date has been set.
Okay, so I think we should leave that then.
So your only question, Madam Mayor, is July 28th.
Right. How does the council feel about having it? The reason that I've heard from staff is that it allows them to plan vacations for a lot of people on staff so that they're not trying to cover for each other during meetings and things, and that's why they ask for one in the summertime. Open for discussion.
I've always enjoyed that meeting off, and I've never voted to not have it off, and it gives me actually a vacation from everything for a while.
Rick?
Yeah, let's leave it off so they don't have to cover for each other.
Okay. And it typically is a slow time even with the community because everybody's out on vacation. So I don't think we've ever been backed up because we didn't have that meeting. So
I remember some pretty heavy meetings in September this past year.
Yeah, but I don't think we ever didn't get it all done.
Well, one of the nice things, though, is by planning those couple of joint planning commission meetings, we've left those fifth Mondays free.
That's true.
So that if we get jammed up with budget or whatever, we've still got that.
Okay. Right.
All right. So
I'd move approval of A6 with the corrections made with the joint meetings and everything else status quo.
Okay. Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Betty, are you in favor?
Aye.
Okay. So it was unanimous. Okay, then moving on to item D1. And that is, there we go. Discussion on a ballot measure to increase the transient occupancy tax, TOT. Susan.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and council members, and Happy New Year, now that we're back. This is an item that council requested that we bring information on for council to review and provide direction to staff. It has to do with increasing transient occupancy tax from 10% to 12% and actually taking that measure before the voters. Council would need to decide whether or not they want to go for the June ballot or the November ballot, and I presented the applicable dates for the June ballot in an attachment. The November ballot, the only information I have is we would have to have the full text of the measure to the county by sometime in July. We don't have the dates on the November ballot yet. One of the things that council needs to be aware of and considerate of in making this decision is the ongoing negotiation. So I'll give it back to council.
Okay. And Rob, we can confirm that that is the BID is 1% now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The 1%.
Okay. All right. Rick, you're the one that brought this forward. You want to talk about it first?
You know, I really don't care if Britney Spears gets custody of her kids or who wins the Super Bowl, but I sure care about getting this passed. There's going to be 22,000 inmates that Schwarzenegger is going to let out of prison, people that should be in prison that are going to be let out. The COP grant is in high jeopardy now. That's the $100,000 a year that we get. I'll bet you we don't get it. This is one of the few measures that we can look at and say it's not going to come directly from the Morro Bay resident. There's other things that we're looking at that are on future agenda items, such as public safety assessment or public utility user's fee or things like this. This is one thing that the visitors to Morro Bay will be picking up most of the tab on. Now, a $150 room is 15% TOT currently. With a 12%, it would be $18. With a 13%, it would be $19.50. Contrary to what was said earlier, I've never heard of a person calling a place and asking what your TOT is. I don't believe it. By passing this, it would allow us to do other things also. We have an artificially high number in the general fund because of the Duke contribution to us annually. This is money that should not be counted on. This is money that shouldn't be in the general fund. This is money that should be in reserves. And if we did pass this, we would be able to do that. And Susan, correct me if I misspeak on any of this. Which our reserves are currently getting, what, a return of 4.6 that we've got $480,000 in. So this would allow us, and also I don't think we have time to put it on the June ballot. I think it's more realistic that it go on the November ballot. But the thing is, we're not passing it right here tonight, but we need to direct staff to take a look at it to find out what we have to do to get it on the November ballot at least. I wouldn't mind excluding the parks from the BID, but I wouldn't want to exclude them from the TOT increase. And I'll pass this on for other comment.
Okay, Melody?
Well, I have from time to time talked about increasing the TOT, and I think I'm even in the last minutes or some minutes I read the other day. But I think it was finally Ms. Solu's comment tonight where she said that if the county goes ahead with this bid idea and the hotels increase 1%, that will allow them to further promote themselves. And once they further promote themselves and increase their occupancy, that's what actually will start to increase our TOT. I would probably agree with Mr. Grantham in part that I don't call hotels up and ask what's your bed tax there or your TOT. However, I have fainted when I've seen the amount of TOT when I'm there with my credit card. You know, it does hurt the impression that a consumer has about going somewhere. So I would probably not favor it seems to be the wrong time with the bid thing going on right now, and it seems to be the wrong time with the kind of pressures that we feel in the economy right now. And it seems to be the wrong time with the kind of occupancy rates that the hotel people are feeling right now. And the more you pay for the hotel, the less you are likely to go to a higher scale restaurant, shall we say. I just think it's probably, you know, it's something I've actually favored in the past, but I think it's the wrong time to do it.
Okay. Bill?
Initially, I think I hadn't really done any thinking about this, and I was thinking, yeah, TOT is increase is safe. I don't know if it is yet at this point, so really not making any pronouncements on it. I will say, based on previous comment, our motels are having a hard time staying half full. Our occupancy rates are at half or below, I think we'll find, if you look at the overall year. I think if we put this on a ballot, it will pass, because I've seen it happen before. The public says, yeah, great, no problem, it doesn't affect me, and if we put it on a ballot, it will pass. I also agree with some of the comment in hearing, well, I had, not what I'm doing now, but I had a business operating when we went through a slowdown before and saw the bottom fall out of tourism, and I was one of these people saying, yeah, next year it'll be better, next year it'll be better. Well, 3 or 4 years later, it still wasn't. But I wasn't involved in this job, and so all I got to do is sit around and whine about the fact business was bad. I think we're going to see, as much as I hate to see this, I think we're going to see a decline starting this next year in occupancy in the motels. I think that they see it coming. That's why they're not raising rates, and I think we're going to see our TOT drop. I don't know at this point whether raising the TOT 2% will affect those stays. I would love to get an opinion from somebody that does that for a living, because we can sit up here and make all these pronouncements. Yeah, it won't hurt a thing, I don't believe it, but the bottom line is I don't know. I would like, before we decide to put this on the ballot, I'd like to get somebody that specializes in that to come back and say, no, people don't ask about TOT. I know I haven't, but I've also fallen over almost dead when I've gotten a motel bill. So if there were some way we could get some sort of economic opinion off of the internet or something where we see what happens if you raise the TOT, I'd like to look at it before I decide to go ahead and put it on the ballot. I'm a little bit leery.
She did get a couple of no's and a couple of yeses on the people that did respond. So we had an overwhelming non-response.
I would point out, I mean, I heard Councilmember Grantham say he's not looking for the June, and that's refreshing from my standpoint, because to try to put it on the June ballot would have been possible, but the time constraints would have been very difficult to make them all. If it's a November ballot, it certainly is something you can see, because we don't know where the bid's going to go. It's Board of Supervisors at the end of the month. Then it has to go to the vote. I don't know how long that vote. It might be something that this can be relooked at if you want staff to bring back more information, provide its direction. But since it's November, we do have, that's, you'd have to decide by, I think it's July. We would have to be working on it now, but it's July is when our resolution to combine the election, is my recollection, for the November is sometime in July. So you do have more time. So if there is something you want us to bring back, you know, provide us with direction, or whether you don't want us to look at it at all.
Madam Mayor, is it possible we could contact, and I don't remember his name, was it Coton or something like that, was the gentleman we brought in to talk about, is there some information we could get from him to see if there's a relationship between that, to see whether there is, I mean, I don't know how valid his information was, but it's more than what I've got.
Right. We certainly can. We do have an appointment scheduled to talk to him about some other issues, so we could certainly ask him about, in general, TOT and whether he has any studies or knows of any studies that have done that.
Whether there's an impact or no impact. I would certainly ask the council consider directing staff to contact him about those things so we can see how prudent it is to go ahead. And it might be great. As I say, I'm not opposed to it. I'd just like to know.
Mr. Grantham, would you be interested in entertaining maybe the 1% bid and a 1% TOT, so the cumulative effect would be 2%?
I'd be interested in anything that's going to bring this city some more revenue. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm interested in this.
And are you earmarking that 1% for advertising solely, or would that be split with the city?
I think it should be split.
Well, my feeling on this is I think the last time we did the TOT, the rest of the county was doing it as well. And to do it that way is good, because then you're equivalent with all of the other lodging industries that are nearby. To be the only one out there, and I agree, I don't either call and ask ahead. about the TOT, but then when you get that bill when you leave for what you thought was a $150 room and it's $175, it makes you think about whether you're going to go back again and whether you can afford to go back again, not in a bad way, but just, you know, hey, it's a lot more than I thought when I budgeted my trip. I think that the BID, what the hotel owners have said is that they are probably going to absorb that. They're not going to actually put it on the bill. They're going to absorb it themselves so that they can get more advertising and draw more people. And they can't do that with the TOT. The TOT has got to go on the bill. So it seems to me if they're willing to do that just to increase...
Margin is for the time he's here on other issues. But, yeah, I mean, we would, for any time he spends researching an issue, yes, we would be charged with it. But it's part of the, we're using him for the Embarcadero and Market. And if he can certainly very quickly put us towards some studies that have been done on the economic impact of increasing the TOT, I'm sure he'll do it at no cost. But he's already here talking to us about other issues, and we use him for other issues too.
Well, if I might, that we're asking for direction to a study we can look at.
Well, if I might, it seems like a couple of years ago, or maybe not even that long, about a year ago, we had a fellow here who we hired and gave him money to talk to us about revenue enhancement schemes, and he went through utility taxes, and that was our way of getting to the development impact fee. It's probably Muni Financial. And I'd like to pull that information out, or I mean, I have that information, but I don't want to spend any more money asking other people about what to do with this. I'd rather... If somebody's really interested in pushing TOT right now, do some internet research, bring us the information back. I don't want to spend more city money investigating this idea.
Well, I think what Bill was referring to was if there had been any studies done, and if we ask Mr. Coton, can he direct us to any studies that have been done on this issue, I can't imagine he'd charge just to say, yeah, go to this website. So,
much as I didn't always agree with him, he's been pretty good working with us, if I remember correctly. And we could probably, as an aside, say, where do we go to get something definitive? And he would, if he's going to be here anyway. I don't think I want to hire him to do any studies or put together any reports. But certainly I would like to find out if he knows something that we could lead to.
Okay, so where do we want to go on this then? We've got consensus that we want to find out if there's any studies that have been done about raising TOT and how it affects occupancy.
Right. And the question is you know, I guess the question is, does this live on another day or does it die tonight? Do you want staff to come back sometime in probably April or with an update on where the bid is and whether to begin the process of putting this on the November ballot? That's the issue.
I think that's reasonable to bring it back when we find out what the bid situation is, whether that's going through or not. And then have that discussion based on
and
that. If they decide not to do it.
And then bring back any studies on the TOT and the impacts and what?
I think, obviously, you'll bring back an update on the bid and the status of that and how it's going forward in the county. And maybe just bring back the results of your conversation with Mr. Coton. But I don't know that I want a lot of staff time pushed into this.
Right? No, I wouldn't want a lot of staff time either, just to report it, because we need to find out where the bid stands anyway.
Right, right.
So we want to know that. And then if it's not going to happen, then maybe we can look at this again and say, all right, what about a 1% there?
That's so. About, I'd agree with that.
Okay. So do you need a motion about that? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
All I right. move that we direct staff to bring back information about the bid initiative and contact Mr. Coton for information about where we can look for information, but to do nothing more on TOT until after we know what bid is going to do.
No, just because the Board of Supervisors is passing their ordinance, the next step still has to be that it still has to go to the vote of the members of the bid for approval, and that process has got to take more than 30 days. So that's the reasoning why. But as soon as we know the results of the bid, then that's, I think, a good time to come back with whatever information, because I think that will have a lot of bearing on whether you want to move forward or not.
And I would probably just insert this as kind of a general comment about things we direct staff to do. If we sense that we're not going to support this thing finally when it comes back, why direct staff to do a lot of work if they're not going to get the three votes they need to put it on the ballot? So.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Rick opposed. All right, moving on to D2, recommendation from the Harbor Advisory Board on regulating newspaper racks on the Embarcadero. Rick.
Good evening again, Madam Mayor and Council. The subject is recommendation from the Harbor Advisory Board on regulating newspaper racks on the Embarcadero. Mr. Phillips made a great summary presentation, I think, for the public comment on this, and I appreciated his comment, his leadership on this issue. We've had discussions at the Harbor Advisory Board over the last year and a half. I think also Mr. Pierce, or at least our council, also agendized this item, requested agendizing this item probably about a year ago. So this is serving a dual role here, reporting to you a Harbor Advisory Board recommendation and agendizing this at your request. I would like to just read to you the Harbor Advisory Board recommendation, if I could. The Harbor Advisory Board is requesting City Council to ask the City Attorney to draft a news rack ordinance including the following elements. Including the ordinance in Morro Bay Municipal Code, Chapter 8, Public Health and Safety. Second, applicable to the Embarcadero area from Titans Park to Verges Harbor Hut area. Third, City will provide and maintain some level of safe and attractive boxes in these locations. If adopted, this is a parenthesis, if adopted, Harbor Fund will recommend a budget item for this in FY 08 or 09 or some later period, depending on when, if and when it's adopted, end of parentheses. And the papers will have to obtain a permit, pay a small fee for use of the city boxes. Private parties could add other news racks in these locations, provided made city basic city guidelines for boxes and maintenance. Fourth, meet First Amendment requirements, which is an obvious condition. There are many constitutional issues that have been fought out, and we don't suggest or desire the city to get involved in those. And I think obviously Mr. Schultz can speak to that, but there is a number of successful news rack ordinances, and there have been a number of unsuccessful ones, so there's models to follow and models not to follow. And fifth, designate the following sites on the waterfront and designate the following sites on the waterfront and prohibit news racks in all of the locations. Burgess Harbor Hut area, South T Pier Embarcadero sidewalk near the dumpster enclosure on the west side and shuttle stop on the east side, so there'd be two there in the South T Pier area. Giovanni's parking lot moved towards street sidewalk. Pacific Street East End, Pacific Street End East Side Embarcadero, Marina Street End East Side Embarcadero, and Titans Park restroom. These box and install them. If and when you do look at adopting an ordinance, I would say you can defer that question to, and I would suggest you probably do not consider the budget issues other than flag it at this time, and there will be some costs if you do want to look at adopting this ordinance once the draft is prepared for you. That would be the end of my report and answer any questions you have.
Okay, questions for Rick? Betty?
I don't really have questions. I have comments.
Anybody have questions? Okay, comments.
One is relating an experience I had just a month ago over in San Luis. I think it was at the bread place out on Broad Street. Someone from one of the newspaper places had a rack right outside the front door, and obviously the owner had called and said, I want you to remove the rack. It's blowing all over the place. The kind of rack you've provided doesn't allow for containment, and I want it removed. Well, he was upset that his paper wouldn't get shown there because it was a popular place, and they came to a resolution, which I'm not sure what it was, and it doesn't matter, but they came satisfied, which made me think, what is the policy in SLO? So I've started noticing when I'm in San Luis, where are these kinds of racks, and they seem to be in private places, like on Albertson's sidewalk, or in the Rite Aid place, or things like that, or like this private bread store. And so I'm wondering if we can, I mean, one option would be just to eliminate them from public sidewalks, or to, rather than us purchase them, to have the people who are providing them to have to meet certain kinds of criteria for their particular stand, so they pay for it rather than we pay for it. And my last point has to do with what we're calling it, and that is that they're news rack ordinances when, in truth, they're advertisements. And so whether we can regulate advertisements but still allow for the news racks, which would, again, reduce the quantity. So those are my comments, whether it can be done on private rather than public property, whether we can regulate newspaper versus advertisements, and whether or not we can have the people who are providing the papers to make them require a certain kind of rack.
That's a question, Rob. Can we differentiate between advertisements and newspapers?
No. I can bring, I guess the issue for tonight is whether you want us to move forward and work on the regulations, and we can bring you back all as far as we can go on this issue, and whether you want to take a conservative approach or not. City of Paso took the non-conservative approach and got sued and lost big time dollars on it and trying to regulate. City of SLO, you can't regulate them in City of SLO on public property. They're still allowed to do it, the advertisement, the real estate, the New Times. Now, they probably have done an aggressive approach on trying to find where you can put them and trying to get people to isolate them in certain areas. The best approach to putting them on, and this is in the Embarcadero area, I think, is Carmel has done probably the best ordinance, is the first one to look at. And the ones that have prevailed are the ones where the city didn't come to you.
Okay. Melody?
Would it be useful for you then, Mr. Schultz, because I am interested in you working on this, would it be useful for you if we just went down through council and told you the kinds of issues we're concerned about to kind of feed into questions to answer or look at?
Sure. Sure. I think I know most of them. It's usually visual. It's a mm-hmm. peripheration of them. I mean, we're going to try to keep them in the certain areas, what I'm going to look at, and we'd probably get buy-in. I mean, one of the things you do is once you, it's more where the areas are, and we had that from the Harbor Commission, but really it's getting buy-in from the Tribune, from the Bay News, from the major newspapers. Those are the ones that are usually will file suit, and getting them to buy into the locations, and then you try to get them to also contribute, or whether there is the ability. So there's many ways to go about it, but if you have any issues that you'd like to discuss, that certainly will help in starting to write it. But you know, my main concern in the heart, the one issue I have is just making certain that's going to be enough places that they've listed to satisfy the publications, and not for them not to come and glued and say that's just not adequate.
Okay. Well, then I could start off with some of my concerns, and then that'd be okay. I don't know anything about this, so I'm kind of shooting in the dark, but I just don't think it's good to put them in view sheds. So I'm wondering if they can keep their racks but put them on the east side, for example, for the Embarcadero. Can we limit the height or width or size or number of them in any certain place? So that can we create a limit of, say, 5 or 6, no more than 5 or 6 in any particular place? And I think I'll leave it at that and let the rest of them.
And answer that would be yes. Those are all things you can regulate.
Okay. So I would like those kind of included then in the discussion.
I'm sure that anything you come up with will be better than what's there presently. I like the example here. The only other thing I'd like to say is if people are going to be putting their materials in there for advertisement or news, I would like to see a contribution on the cost of these and a contribution for upkeep.
Bill?
I think the first thing we've got to do is realize that with most of these newspaper rags, especially the big papers, it's not how much money they make from those things. They operate a lot on the principle of the thing. Newspapers have a set of standards. It used to be that in the news business, we never gave up our reporters' notes when subpoenaed. We always managed to have them be somewhere else when the subpoena came, because only the stuff that was published went. Newspapers are the same way with their, you know, they may not make a dollar net profit, but they will fight for the constitutionality of having that rack there. and you're going to have to put them in enough places that you're going to get buy-in. If they think that you're trying to eliminate any of them, they're going to fight. I mean, and it's, and God knows most of that stuff is garbage anyway, even when it's a daily paper. But I think that we just have to get as few of them as we can and make them as attractive as we can, because we have the First Amendment behind us. That was assuming they were actually putting out news.
Betty?
I'm curious of whether this is only for city property, or does it include private property as well, like an ARCO or the liquor stores?
Well,
and if we can include them as part of the locations to reduce the number of public locations.
I would suggest that this would be limited just to the Embarcadero for the time being. I think that's why I went to the Harbor Commission first, and we've got issues there that we can attach to our findings about being highly visitor-serving, view-shed issues. So when you say ARCO, but no, to go back, it would still only apply to the public property, and the private property we wouldn't regulate. So, but I was assuming this was only going to be for the Embarcadero to begin with, and then we could maybe go uptown with it. And I don't know if we'd need to go anywhere else, but we certainly could after that. Yeah. But I don't think I'd want to tackle a citywide one at this point in time.
If I may offer a comment, Madam Mayor, the agenda item in front of you is a recommendation from the Harbor Advisory Board limited to the Embarcadero public properties. And there was a lot of discussion at the Harbor Advisory Board, and they became actually to some extent familiar with some of the issues. And I hate to be a wet blanket, but you probably aren't going to get all that you might want in a number of these issues. You know, you can limit it, but you need to be able – you need to – provide the access so that you need to keep them from suing us on principle or because they have expensive lawyers. We will need to be careful to make sure that we still provide public access to these boxes. But we've carefully recommended to you, we think, at least some sites that will provide good access to the public and yet will improve. They are still sometimes in some view corridors, but we'll really improve view corridors, public safety, traffic and transportation issues down on the Embarcadero. It is recommended for the Embarcadero area because we think this might be a good incremental way to attack the problem, and we hope that we might, as Rob says, we might even get some buy-in from the newspaper providers. We haven't quite got there yet, but we've been trying a little bit, and we'll continue to try to see if we can get their cooperation and work cooperatively on improvements, and maybe it's something you can build on in the rest of the community if we could try here.
And I would point out, probably, I don't know the issue in front of the bread store, but with New Times, you do find them in quite a few of the private businesses, and what usually happens to that, and might have happened with the bread store, it was out in front, and when confronted, you know, it's blowing all over, the answer is, well, I have the legal right to be here under the First Amendment, and one of the reasons, way they say is, but certainly if you would place it inside your store, then it's going to eliminate this out in the street, and so that's how the property owner says, fine, you can put it in my door, you know, at the corner view, at any of the places downtown, you find them inside because they'd rather at least have it inside their business than out right in front of their business.
Well, I think that I'd like to see us put together. I love what the Harbor Department's done, and thank heaven, because it's been a long time coming. So I think that, you know, their commission is to be commended for finally tackling this and coming up with a good suggestion, a very positive one. I'd like to see us go ahead, move forward with this. When we get to the point, and that may be very quickly, when we get to that point. Okay? All right.
Do you want a recommendation?
Sure.
Or a motion? I move we accept the Harbor Advisory Board's recommendation to us and direct staff to move forward on coming back with the mechanics of enacting an ordinance.
Okay, any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay, D3, consideration of limiting chain stores on the Embarcadero and downtown area. This one was mine, and it came after I read about Ojai and what they had done in their community about they were very concerned about losing their small town unique character. And so what they did was they copied Port Townsend, Washington, which if you go on the website and check out Port Townsend, it's very similar to Morro Bay. small town, 8,800 people. They've got a lot of Victorian buildings, so they have that additional attraction, but they don't have the rock, and we do. So, again, a very unique fishing village. They wanted to keep that special small-town atmosphere that had made them a tourist attraction. Same thing with Ojai. They looked at what Port Townsend had done and went through quite a bit of discussion in their community. Some of it was a bit acrimonious. I talked to the city manager there and kind of went through the history of what they'd gone through. But what they came up with was very similar to Port Washington and something that seems very practical. When I first suggested this, some of the people at the business meeting said, oh, my gosh, no chain stores. Why would you do that? They could help our economy. They could. But I have to say, I don't find a whole lot of attraction any longer in downtown San Luis. So many of those stores are becoming just like what you find everywhere else. I don't want to go to a mall and go to the same store I can go to and see the same merchandise in every single city. So what I'm saying with this, and the definition of chain store, which was brought up in public comment today, what is your definition of a chain store? It's very specific. They say that it has to be something that is architecturally the same everywhere, the logo is the same everywhere, their advertising is the same everywhere, and the product is pretty much the same everywhere. And if you meet any two or three of those criteria, then you are a chain store, which means that you can have a bank, you can have real estate companies. Those are not considered chains. Or the other one was uniforms, if people have to wear a uniform. What I was looking at this for and what I want council to decide is whether we think that our Embarcadero and downtown areas are also worth keeping unique. We already have chain stores in the shopping areas, along Quintana, fine, North Morro Bay. We already have them. There's room for more. That's fine. I'm not saying don't do it there. I am concerned about putting a Starbucks in the middle of downtown and then watching our local coffee houses die because everybody from out of town goes to Starbucks because they know it's Starbucks. And I'm not picking on Starbucks. I mean, it's not just that, but they're an example of what you can find them everywhere. And I would like us to stay unique. I think it's a good point. I think it's something I wanted us to consider before it becomes an issue instead of when it becomes an issue.
Well, go to a place, you go to a particular restaurant, and I won't mention the name. It was just starts with a D, and they all look the same, and
and
the food's all the
anymore.
Same. But you know what? It's comforting to travelers because mm-hmm. they know they're going to get a meal of a specific, I mean, it ain't great, but it ain't bad. You know, it's something you can live with, and it's the same everywhere. So I think there are a lot of people that actually look for that type of establishment. And whereas if you see a small local eatery, sometimes you look at it and say, do I dare? Because you don't know what you're getting. So, and yeah, they could all be on Quintana Road or something, but I think we have to be very careful because some of the businesses that are successful could theoretically slide into the category of chain store. Now, admittedly, Ace Hardware is out where it doesn't matter, but again, look at Foster's. They've been here since right. longer than we've, right. you know, and they have the uniforms, they have, you know, the logo, they fit the criteria. Of
I'm not talking about kicking anybody out. We'd
no,
have to, obviously we'd have to grandfather in people that are already there. And I know that our local people own some of these businesses. But again, it's do we feel that our downtown shopping core and the Embarcadero are unique enough that we want to keep them unique, or do we want to just leave them open to whatever might happen, the Gap or Starbucks or whatever? That's the question. And that's what I'm putting to you. And if you do feel that it's something we should think about, then we can go ahead and see if we can put together an ordinance, have a public hearing on it, all of that. I just wanted to get the question out there before it becomes an issue. Rick.
I think that people that like Starbucks are going to go to Starbucks, and people that like Top Dogs will go to Top Dogs. There used to be a TCBY yogurt where Blue Sky Cafe is, so that would theoretically throw them out. If they were to be there now. There was also some talk recently about Sears putting in a catalog store. Well, there where that would go by the wayside also. They're certainly a chain.
Let me correct you, because it wouldn't. Based on these ordinances, you could have something like that if it had a limited size storefront and a limited floor space, that Sears store was looking at.
Okay, but that being said, when you're in these economic times that we're in and we already have one hand tied behind our back, I don't see any reason to put the other hand behind your back and tie it up also. So I'm not for putting limiting chain stores at this time.
Okay, Melody?
I'm not either, actually, and I'll just explain a few reasons. And the first one's just occurred to me tonight because the city attorney is sitting here saying he can't do a news rack ordinance for 6 months because he's too busy. He'd be the fellow who would have to put this ordinance together. The second thing is, as soon as I looked at this, I thought, oh, my gosh, you know, I've got this big new mixed-use building that you all approved down there going up, the three-story thing with the little commercial things on the bottom. What if Jamba Juice wanted to put their place on the storefront? I don't have a smoothies place. I got up at the gym, I do, but if a Jamba Juice came here and wanted to open up on the corner of Ken's new building, I'd say, I think that what we and when you look at that, you can see the planning that's gone into it. They've got their signs placed just so. They have no other posts in the street. We've got great trash cans downtown, by the way, now. But we've got far too many poles hanging around, and we've got empty storefronts. And I would suggest, really, that what downtown needs is it needs for us to get on the ball with downtown visioning, what we would like to see it look like finally. And I think another thing came to me, too, that it's not the business owners down there. It's the property owners, the people who own the property downtown. So what I would suggest as a good step is, rather than restricting business opportunities or keeping anyone out of our empty storefronts, I would certainly start working on a vision for what do we want it to look like ultimately. And the other idea that I got, just as a brainstorm, I thought it might be good for the city council to have some high-level talks with the property owners, the people who own those properties downtown, and perhaps even schedule them out into summertime so that they're far enough away, not with all of them at once, but bringing in four or five of the owners, and I don't think there's a whole lot of them. I think a lot of them are owned by one person. But because every once in a while when I talk to the business owners downtown, I hear that it's high rents, it's grumpy landlords, it's bad leases, you know, those kinds of things. So if we walk around behind them and say to the property owners, what do you conceive of for a good downtown district, and get them to participate with us and to talk with us about what we want to do, I think that'd be a little bit more proactive and probably would get at the problem that's going on down there. What's really going on, I think, is behind the scenes.
Okay.
Ready? I think Bill has something to say.
Actually, if I may add something that is maybe reasonably positive, it's been a long time since I've been downtown in Santa Barbara, but one of the last times I was down there, there are buildings that have chain stores in them, but you don't see the typical storefront, the big signs. There's a McDonald's downtown that you know it's a McDonald's, but you have to go inside the building and look for it. It's not a drive-through or anything like that. And I think there's a way of allowing chain stores. And I think the chain stores we're talking about that we might be afraid of are not interested in our downtown anyway. They need more square footage in a building than that. And I know we've already, to be proactive, have passed an ordinance prohibiting box stores, as if any box store would ever want to come here. But, you know, and I'd even have second thoughts about that if there were a place we could put it. But we've done that already just to make sure we don't do any business. But I think there are ways you could have the downtown and have a number of different types of chain stores and not have them be eyesores that you would be concerned of. I think Santa Barbara's a good example.
Okay, Eddie?
I like the idea of keeping the uniqueness and the character of the small town. Certainly towns since the two that you picked in Ojai have wonderful resolutions with wonderful reasons to do this kind of ordinance. And when I first read it just the title is like, oh, no. But when you read their ordinances, they're very specific. They have induced people here, so maybe we don't have the urgency that these guys did. I think there's always the potential, but and we can decide how soon we want the vision to come back, if we want to move that up.
Okay. All right. Well, as I say, I just wanted to get people's feelings on it. If is that agreeable to the rest of the council that we bring it back with our downtown visioning and have it part of the consideration of that topic? Yes?
I think
it fits well. And really that council stay aware. And I know that even though Mr. Amble's not here, they watch this meeting the next day.
Oh, sure.
Very conscientious. That they remain aware that we're concerned about the downtown, and we would really like to move that vision idea along.
Okay. All right. Thank you for the discussion. I appreciate that. And now we're
Rob,
going to...
do you need something?
No. It's fine.
Okay. And then we go to item D4, which is setting the date for the Commission Advisory Board interviews.
Any of those days are equal to me.
The 31st, I can't. There's a something at Cal Poly that I've been invited to participate in. Focus the Nation.
Does that go into the evening?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The wrap up is in the evening.
Then I'll kill it for me too. But the other days are fine for me.
All right. Any preference, Tuesday or Wednesday?
No.
Okay. Any preference, Bridget?
Are we going to be able to get this done in one day because there are so few appointments to do, one night meeting?
Mm-hmm. There are quite a few, but I would think so.
I would like to let you know that we did have another resignation today from the Recreation and Parks Commission. Commissioner Winter resigned today.
Wow.
So just so you know, we have one additional.
I'm sorry, who was it?
Leba Winter.
Oh. So how's
that means three openings now on that.
You're correct.
Right.
Okay.
Wow.
Ms. Luker, what time were you thinking to start the meeting?
Do we traditionally start at 5 for the interviews? I'm not sure.
It's hard starting at 5, especially if people work. I would say 6.
So perhaps 6 o'clock. Maybe you could designate both days and see how far we get.
Or I don't think we've ever had a problem doing them all in
okay.
one night. Now that we do it as a group.
I'd rather do it
great.
Just plow through.
Yeah, the way we've been doing it lately, it moves a lot quicker than the way we used to do it.
So all right. Well, how about Wednesday? Give you a day off after the council meeting, and we'll go for Wednesday
excellent.
The
30th.
6 o'clock.
Okay.
Here or the community center, do we know? Or to be announced?
To be announced.
Okay.
Do you prefer Lovett's Hall?
I like the community center better just because we're not up on this dais, and I think that's kind of intimidating. I've always felt a little bit uncomfortable with that. I like being on a level with them. Okay,
speaking of uncomfortable, how about some other chairs, though?
Yes.
Are we saying 6 o'clock?
At the community center, if it's available.
The soft chairs from the lounge.
Yeah.
6 o'clock on Wednesday.
Yes, 6 o'clock on Wednesday.
And so I trust, Bridget, that you let both the applicants and the council know what setting we'll be in.
Of course.
Okay.
For these boards, and the due date is Friday, and so you're telling us how many people have signed up?
Right.
Okay.
Is my mic on?
Doesn't sound like it.
AGP, could you check the city clerk's mic? Doesn't seem to be on.
Just so you know, we have currently 3 applications for Planning Commission, 1 for Recreation Parks, 1 for Harbor, and 1 for Community Promotions. I will let you know that we had originally set the deadline for the 18th because we anticipated to do interviews the week of next week, and next week is very wacky in terms of meetings and things that are happening, so we moved the interview dates down so the commission might want to entertain, I'm sorry, the council might want to entertain the idea of extending the application deadline to perhaps the 26th.
Absolutely. All right, so we have no applicants yet for 4 vacancies on the Public Works Advisory Board?
That's correct.
Okay. Everybody out there who's listening, we need some applicants for this board. This is the one that deals with water issue and streets and trees and all those things, and there's 4 vacancies on it. So please think about that. Harbor Advisory Board, Community Promotions, there are vacancies. There's one vacancy on the Planning Commission and three now on Recreation and Parks. So, again, if you're listening and you're interested in serving on one of these boards, application period, we're probably going to extend. Till when?
The 25th of January.
Till the 25th of January. Okay. All right.
I'll make that motion. I think we probably need a motion, do
okay.
we not, to extend it?
All right. Go ahead.
I move that we extend the application deadline to 5 o'clock on Friday, January 26th for boards and commissions.
25th, yeah. And Rick seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? None. Okay. All right. Item D5, City Council discretionary appointments to various boards and committees. On this one, did anyone want to change? Or are we all happy where we are?
I am.
I'm happy where I am. I would just suggest that we have an alternate to the Air Pollution Control District.
They don't do alternates.
They don't do alternates.
No, it's not.
If you can't be there, they wouldn't let anybody else come.
That's right.
Okay.
That's the way the law is set up, the way that thing is done. There are no alternates.
And is that the same, Rick, for the Economic Vitality Corporation?
No, they take alternate.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
Well, I would offer to be an alternate on that. But otherwise, I like my appointment. My appointments, rather. And also, I was a little curious.
Good with that?
Yeah. If you look on the list of discretionary meeting times, the bottom of the page lists the San Luis Obispo County Housing Trust Fund. And yet, nobody, it's not listed over here, there's nobody on it.
Well, I'm on it.
Oh, sorry, Betty, you're on it. So maybe we should amend this list of discretionary appointments to include that committee and put Betty on it.
I think she probably just got left off on the very bottom or something. But
it's probably, yeah.
Okay. All right, so we will maintain them as is for another year.
Need a motion?
I think we would.
I may first, with any recommendations on whether your council compensation should be increased. I'll let you know any increase, though, would have to be after your next election, so it wouldn't occur. You can't automatically, under the government code, give yourself a raise immediately. It has to be after the following election. 2 years ago, when the issue came up, council decided not to forego forming the committee and felt that at that point in time it wasn't necessary to do it. You certainly have that option again, or you can form the committee. The committee membership gives you some general discretion on who to appoint, but it says a broad range, which could be two former elected officials who are not currently serving as a council and one citizen at large. So the question is, I'm bringing this forward because our policies and procedures require it, and I'm looking for direction.
Well, that's my question. Our policies and procedures require it. It says shall. So I would think, number one, can we change that to may? Because if we don't feel that it's necessary, this reads that we do it whether we like it or not, and I'm surprised you let us get away with it last time.
Since it is your policy and procedure, I let you.
So maybe
flex
we ought
it?
To
yeah,
make
so
it
So if we want
optional.
To amend it, do we need to bring it back as another?
That's the one I could certainly bring back, so it says May. That would certainly clean it up.
Okay.
I would support that.
I would support a motion that would decline to form the committee again this time.
I'd second that.
Well, why don't you include in your motion that we bring back the policy to say may instead of shall?
And in addition, direct staff to come back with this policy with changing shall to may.
I'd second that.
And
okay.
We're good
Any
to go.
Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Just so the public knows, we just turned down the option of a raise.
It proves we're not the legislature or Congress.
Really?
Or the supervisors.
Okay, D7, appointment of a vice mayor to serve a one-year term. Melody has just completed her year and served very well. Thank you very much. And now we need someone to go for 2008.
I'd like to wonder if we could change how this happens as well. Maybe this is part of procedures and policies. We seem to do it on a rotational basis. And whether we can just formalize that rotational basis rather than nominate someone each time.
Yeah, I think the only problem with that is when, if you, I know sometimes the revolving thing, you don't get a turn, it seems to me.
Maybe I think you could write it so
you do that?
Okay. And so I think I'd rather this come back. Well, we still need a vice mayor,
yeah,
but
we need to do it today.
That's something that we need to come back to.
Madam Mayor, there's only one of us that hasn't been a vice mayor at this point, and that's Mr. Grantham, so I would nominate him. Everybody else has been one, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
In fair rotation, I would nominate Mr. Grantham as vice mayor.
Okay. Any other nominations? Okay.
Do we just run the train by here?
Well, I'm sure everybody joins me in wishing you good health and a favorable schedule for the next year.
Thank you.
Does this need to be a motion?
Acclamation.
Okay, we need to vote. All in favor of Mark as the vice mayor?
Aye.
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 Okay.
But I would like to come back to Ms. Wendholz's suggestion because I think it takes...
Can do it and bring it back at some time in the future.
Okay. Don't put a rush on it because we've got a year.
Before
we don't need it for
before
a year.
Your next appointment.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
That was a motion.
Yes.
Council
as the vice mayor. It was just a nomination. It was a nomination and we voted on the nomination.
So I'll move that Mr. Schultz bring back that resolution before the next January meeting when we do appointments.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay. Andrea put a wonderful quote in one
agenda
of her...
Agenda items?
Oh, I'm sorry. Future agenda. I always forget that. Future agenda items.
I have two.
Okay.
One would be to agendize what we talked about having come back from our Santa Barbara visit, that we have a meeting with staff and council, and that we do that sometime this winter. In fact,
maybe one of those
better.
Fifth Monday,
the Monday in March that we haven't used.
Could I get some elaboration on what we'd be doing? I'm sorry.
I'm hesitant to call it because I think there's one way we can call it and one way we can't call it. Like, I can't call it a workshop, but I can call it a retreat or vice versa.
No, I thought you meant a goals and priorities workshop. Is that what you'd like to do?
Yeah, is that what I want to
do?
Mm-hmm. It's what we talked about doing at the end of that day we went away together.
Yes, we can call it a workshop. Yeah.
I think the difference was conference or workshop. That was one of the... Okay.
And then the second item that I'd like to agendize is a discussion at our next meeting, unless it's too full, then I would be glad to do it the 1st of February. But I do think that we need to talk about and at least agree to write a letter, and I'd be glad to make this my agenda item and bring it back to the governor, to State Parks, to Maldonado, to Mr. Blakesley, to the Board of Supervisors, that we need to address what Mr. Schwarzenegger has proposed and with positive suggestions on what some alternatives might be. And I'd be glad to write that letter if you want.
I would support bringing that.
Or at least have a discussion.
Let's ask him to give us one of the parks.
There you go.
Well, but I think he's at least semi-serious, and so I think we need to address it in a serious way.
Oh,
my. I know. I am.
All right. And on your first issue, do we have council support for that, a get-together meeting for staff and the council?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have that as a future agenda.
Okay, and going for that fifth Monday, is that a good idea then? Shall we just, okay, we would like to do that. March 5th Monday. Okay, Bill?
And then DPR, do I have support for that?
Yeah, I think you got that right
away.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. Bill?
No.
Rick?
Question on the goal setting work. This is going to be an open public... Okay.
Yes, and one of the issues we'll probably bring back to you is whether you want someone to facilitate that meeting, which we discussed also in Santa Barbara. So we might bring back a preliminary discussion of issues and what you want, but at least we've got the agenda item to start working on it.
Do you have a sense if we're going to have
any new items? Okay. Now, Andrea had a lovely quote at one of her updates for us, and I asked her to share it with us for our first quote of the new year.
Thanks, and a great way to end the meeting. And the quote is, The way a team plays as a whole determines its success. You may have the greatest bunch of individual stars in the world, but if they don't play together, the club won't be worth a dime, and that's by Babe Ruth. Thank you.
We're adjourned.